We believe that alcoholism is a disease and that Alcoholics Anonymous is one solution to that disease. I'm here to bring you the voices of its members. Everyone that comes on the show, including myself, is an active member and has found recovery in the rooms of AA. As you listen, please take what works for you and leave the rest.
Been in a pretty good space, but not really feeling like I have something to offer right now. I've just kind of been reclusive for about a year.
Well, we're here today.
So anyway.
You're going to come out of the comfort zone.
Freely.
You're giving freely. That's right.
Yes, or willing to give freely. Let me put it that way. When I got your text yesterday, I was like, oh, fuck, seriously? Okay. And then it was like, who said it? Was it you or was it Gunthel? Or Scotty? The answer is always yes.
Yeah. I think Will said the answer is always. Yes, anyway. Several of us, probably. Sure. The answer is always yes.
Right. Exactly. Right.
All right. So you can begin.
Oh, we're I didn't ready know to we go. We're on.
We're on now.
Okay. I guess I don't need my glasses, do I? Oh, hang on a second.
You can start with your name and your sobriety date, and then you'll share your experience, strength, and hope. What it was like out there drinking, how you got to the rooms of recovery, your strength, and your hope, what it's like now in sobriety, and how you maintain that.
My name's David. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 9th, 2001. And that's actually not my first sobriety date, which I'll get to at some point in this little talk. So I hope I say something that someone can take and benefit from during this. I'll try to keep it to the format, experience, strength, and hope. So the experiences, you know, what it was like. And I was thinking about that as I was kind of driving over here, and it's been flashing in my mind a lot lately that it's always been fearful. Like, so much of my life was just based on fear and being scared and not ever feeling like I fit in, not ever really feeling comfortable in my skin. Which is just a terrible, awful place to be, to try to live through that and to be that way. And I don't say it in that way to, you know, gain any type of pity from anyone or feel sorry for me. It is what it is, and it's a valued part of my journey. And I'm so grateful today that I understand so much more about myself and have learned through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What makes me tick, right? Why do I do think, feel, and act a lot of the ways that I have for so much of my life? And but it was scary, you know. As a child, my home life was very chaotic. My mom was a alcoholic and addict and never found these rooms. And as a result, it made everything around the house just completely in turmoil and chaos all the time. She was She left my father when I was like two, and I had always been told that the reason was because he was beating me. And many, many years later, I came to find out that that wasn't the case. She was just psycho. And, you know, sadly, she never felt comfortable in her skin. So it's interesting how sometimes the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But as a result of that, you know, she was always in another relationship. There were constantly, as I was, you know, growing up through my childhood, there were constantly different men around all the time. And we moved, like, every year we moved. So I could never, you know, get any place that could establish any roots that were worthwhile. So, you know, I always found myself winding up in a new school somewhere, a new class, having to try to make new friends again, and just never really fitting in as a result of all that. So, You know, I did things like stretch the truth a lot, like, you know, lie about who I was or what I could do or just who, you know, who I remember. I think I was like probably in the third grade and I didn't want to go to school. And I remember just wanting to be Danny Partridge, if any of you know the Partridge Family. I may be dating myself at this point. But, you know, just to be anybody else other than who I was, even in third grade. So basically the bottom line for all that is it just creates this level. And, you know, it's just had always been with me of uncomfortability. And, you know, eventually you experience that long enough and the body wants to survive. The human nature aspect and element of us people is to find some type of survival or coping mechanism. And, you know, finally I found myself in the seventh grade and I found a group of people that I could fit in with and I didn't need to tell any stories to and I didn't need to try to be something I wasn't. I just needed to basically, and I had, by that time I had discovered smoking. So, and that was a great relief. I remember, and that's kind of when it started. I snuck a couple of cigarettes from my mom and I went and I smoked those cigarettes and it coughed my brains out. And I remember thinking all at the same time, oh my God, this is terrible. How can I do this? But yet at the same time, feeling this sense of comfort and ease. And it was just like, at that point, the game was on. It was, what could I get? How much could I get? How much could I do? So, you know, the progression with all that was smoking, drinking. My first drinking experience was with a buddy, and we literally put a little bit of every booze from the liquor cabinet in a gallon milk jug and put some orange juice in it and mix that up. And we drank this thing and both of us got so sick, we puked our guts out. But I remember the next day thinking, well, let's do this again. And I'm like, I look back on that now. It's like, that's kind of some twisted thinking because, you know, I guess I considered that to be fun, but now I know it was all about changing the way I feel. So when we talk about the experience and how that continued and how that progressed, it went from smoking to drinking to, you know, experimenting and trying other drugs, which the people that I was associating with and hanging out with at that point in my life, all these things were readily available and around. And I spent most of my teenage years just kind of hanging around, not doing much of anything, being a bum and, you know, earning some money here or there, doing odd jobs, getting money from my mom or some other relative. And it was about getting loaded, drinking and smoking pot and doing other things. That was pretty much my existence at that point. And got involved with a gal at 14. We met in high school. By the way, I got kicked out of high school at about 15. And, well, it was probably mutual because I didn't see any value in finishing school because we were just too busy, you know, smoking pot and getting loaded and getting high because it was fun. There was a lot of times that, you know, admittingly, it was fun. So where are we? Let's see. Fast forward. The progression continued. The pot led to, you know, cocaine and... Am I supposed to, are we just trying to...
No rules.
Okay, no rules.
No rules.
Good, good.
Just honesty.
That's... We'll get a lot of that. So it led to cocaine and relationship, you know, with this gal I was with at the time. And we wound up, you know, two stupid young kids. We wound up getting married. Thank God that we never had any children together. But anyway, so the coke led to, you know, eventually things stopped working and I needed to continue to find something else that would work. And then I found crack cocaine and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And kind of got stuck on that for about 3 or 4 years and damn near killed myself a couple of times. I don't know how I've survived some of the things that that I put myself through or the places that I put myself in, to all in an effort to get and stay loaded. I know now that there was a God in my life that had always been watching out for me. I clearly. Clearly know that today. And that's part of how I'm able to sit here and share this right now. Because I should have, could have, should have been dead from something a long, long time ago. So, anyway. So, what happened? We'll start getting into the strength of what happened. And it wasn't by any of my own really desire. It was just a series of events. So, my first wife, she left. I came home. I came home from a boys' weekend out. And half of the house was packed up and she was gone. And, you know, my smart, witty, alcoholic, addict thinking was like, well, okay, I know other girls. I'll just make a few phone calls and we'll get some other girls over here and party's on again, right? And it literally was that. That's what I did. And so it wasn't so much about any depth in the relationship. It was all, and I know this today, you know, there were aspects of relationships that were all about, you know, what could I get out of the relationship? And at that point, it was mostly, you know, just sexual in nature to go along with changing another way to change how I felt. You know, we can use a lot of different things from shopping to working. I've been a workaholic. I've been a sexaholic. I've, you know, just a lot of different things to take me out of how I felt. Again, not feeling comfortable in my own skin. So I came home. She was gone. I found a replacement and, you know, hung out with a couple other girls for a period of time. And then I met my second wife who showed up and she was very happy to use and drink together with me. And we did that for a while. And then she got pregnant and we got married and she stayed sober, clean and sober. That was a big struggle. During the pregnancy, I think she drank a few times here and there, but wasn't using any drugs. And, you know, I've got my oldest son, and he's just such a blessing in my life. Again, another God thing. So he was about 2 years old, and we were trying to rebuild some financial areas of our life. So we moved in with my second wife's parents. And during the course of that, I was still sneaking out at night and going and using and copping drugs and stuff. And I came home. This time I came home and all my shit was on the front lawn. And I was basically, you know, you're out of here. Even though she was still a willing participant in a lot of the using that we were doing together. But you're out of here. So you have a choice. You can either go to rehab or you can go do whatever you're going to go do. It's your choice. So kind of reluctantly, I went to rehab. And that was my first experience, true experience in a 12-step program. And my mother-in-law worked for the city, for a municipality, and they would send all of the city employees that had substance problems to a place in Calistoga called Duffy's. So it was suggested that this is where you should go, to Duffy's. So they contacted a couple of other family members of mine, and my grandfather was willing to flip the bill with that. And there was a big part of me that was kind of relieved and like saying the game's over now. Okay, I can just, you know, maybe I can find a way to just not have to do this anymore, because it was exhausting, you know, trying to work and continue to get loaded and all the shucking and jiving and lying and all the stuff that goes along with being active in our use. It was exhausting. So I there was a part of me that, again, reluctantly, but I was glad to go to rehab. And something happened that I still can only explain as being God. Again, that's what I said. He's always been there. You know, it was just a place that I was going to for 28 days. And they checked me in and they showed me to my room. And something came over me. Still can't completely explain it. They showed me to my room and that person left, and there I was just sitting by myself. Just by myself. With no cigarettes, no booze, no drugs of any other kind. Just me. And something came over me to get on my knees and kneel down against the bed and to pray. And that's what I did. And this is what I said. Hey there, God. I think you're real. Kind of believe that you are. But if you are, I could really use some help. Right now. And that was all I said. And that was more than enough. The God that I understand, that I seek to have a continued relationship today, that was all that he needed to hear, was I could really use some help. And something happened in that moment. My desire and my urges to drink and to use were completely removed from me. Now, how do I go? How do you go from having to? I mean, lie, cheat, steal. One night I even told my mother-in-law, who tried to corner me at the front door at about 1 a.m. as I was going out to cop more dope. She's like, no, please, just don't leave. And I remember saying, get out of my way. I don't want to hurt you. That's the kind of mission that I was on. So how do you go from someone that has to get loaded every day in some capacity to completely being removed from that mental obsession and craving and desire? It was gone. Just gone. There's only one reasonable explanation that I can say for that. And that's a God that I still, to this day, do not completely understand and probably never will, because, well, he's God, he's big. But I can't deny the existence of for 1 second. So at that point, you know, it was just, I was in. I was all in. Something happened to me. Something came over me. I didn't have to go get loaded anymore. And I could just focus on how do I just live and be free and be happy. And, You know, fortunately, the 12 steps has the exact answer to how to do that. So I was in. Whatever they told me you needed to do, this is what you need to do. You need to follow the outline in this program. This is what we've done, the people that have walked before you. And as I continued, you know, the 28-day program, I don't know, maybe I was 10, 14 days, somewhere into there. I had this vision that how it works is I wanted this life that was different from the life that I had ever had. But it was over there. Over there. And I equated it to being across this pond. And I'm on one side of this pond. And on the other side of this pond, there's this big picnic going on with a band and banners and barbecue, and everybody's laughing and having a good time. And I could see this from where I was. And I was like, well, I want to be over there. The only problem was I didn't know how to swim. And there were these huge walls on either side, and you couldn't walk around. You had to cross the water. And it was almost like, you know, as I dived in and started to work the steps, it was almost like me gaining some willingness to say, hey, and shout out across the pond, hey, how do I get there? And the guy over says, hey, hold on a second. And this guy walks across the water and says, there are these little steps just under the surface. I know where they are. Step exactly where I step and follow me. And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. And that's the program. 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, the steps are there. This has been tested for over 75 years now. It works. You can get to the other side of that pond, of that life, whatever your dreams or desires might be. And I'm not saying that we won't have, you know, challenges along the way. But it's clearly outlined. We just have to become willing to take one step after the other and follow the guide, shall we say, the other people in the groups, good sponsorship. Seek a God as we understand him today. So, you know, through all of that, oh, and by the way, so that first sobriety date was February 8th of 1992. So what happens, I get clean and sober. Life's going pretty darn good. I'm pretty excited. I'm going to meetings every day, literally every day. AA and NA are my life. This is what I do. I'm in service. I have multiple service commitments. I'm doing H&I. People thought that I should go become a counselor. And, you know, life was great. I had a different direction. I decided I wanted to build a business and become successful in that. And that's what I set out to do. And, you know, there was a point where nothing that I couldn't conceive, I wasn't capable of doing. And I completely believe that to be true for anybody that can put the booze down or the bag down or whatever, the needle down or whatever your thing is. If we can put that down and find a God and, you know, work this program, then we can do and achieve pretty much almost anything that we would like to try to do. But learning now and understanding now that sometimes, at least for me, I can get off on still other things, and work, diving into work became kind of another addiction for me, you know, and it was more easily justified because I wasn't, you know, drinking and using and creating a lot of wreckage around me, particularly with the people that I cared about. And I thought, well, this is good, though, because I'm helping to build, you know, financially building a future and things like that. But so what happens is, for myself, still, even as I talk this tape now, I can be easily distracted So I allowed work to get me distracted. And what happened at about 3.5 years was I got so busy with that life, I started cutting back on my meetings. So instead of 7 meetings a week, I started going to 6. And then 6 started to be 5, and 5 turned into 4, and so on and so on. And, you know, I was maybe doing a couple meetings a week. And eventually I wasn't doing any meetings a week. And I got the great idea. I got this bright idea that I could drink again. Because I really didn't think alcohol was my big problem. Because the thing that really kind of took me out was the crack cocaine. So I'm like, okay. And we were down in Santa Cruz on a week's vacation. And I had this bright idea that I could drink. And, you know, it went okay for a little while. Maybe about a year I was able to hold it together. But eventually, it all kind of fell apart again. So, and I was blaming everything else but myself and was too prideful to go back to AA or NA. So I had this bright idea to do a geographic. I sold my business. I sold my business and moved the family from the Bay Area to where I am now. And a funny thing happened. I should back up just a real little bit. So my second wife at the time, after I got clean in 92, she still had struggled. Because remember, we were drinking and using together. She still had struggled with trying to put any time of reasonable sobriety together. And never did. She's sober now. But, so that was kind of stressful. And so now we were both kind of drinking again, and we did this geographic, and we moved to where I reside now. And I went to the ATM really late one night, saw, here I am, half lit, getting more money out of the ATM, and I hear this voice of a guy next to me. He says, "Hey, buddy, you really shouldn't drink and drive." And I look over. And it's a guy who I used to be really great friends with in the meetings, who I guess lived up here now. And I was just like, oh. He was the last person that I wanted to see. But once again, God doing for me what I could not do for myself, because it planted the seed in my head that, hey man, you're really off track here. You've got to get back doing something. But I still thought that I kind of was having it together. So long story short, I'll try to fast forward this. One day, I took a look at my second wife, and I'm like, you know, you're way worse off than me. You know, I'm still kind of reasonably, yeah, I should probably get sober again, but I'm not drinking half as much as you. So, you know, you need to go to rehab. And the whole time I'm thinking, you're just screwing up my drinking. So you should go to rehab and then I can drink and I'll be able to control my stuff a little bit better. So this is the insanity of being, of how we think sometimes, at least how I can think. So I dropped her off at a rehab and my next stop was the liquor store. And actually it was a Walgreens, Longs. Grab a bottle on my way out. I catch out of the corner of my eye this book on one of these twirly-do racks. And I go over and I look at the book and this blue cover with these praying, here's God for you, with these praying hands. And the title of the book is God of Second Chances. And I bought the book. So here I am now with the book and the bottle at the checkout, getting odd looks from the clerk. And that, you know, I took that home and cracked them both open. And actually, I read that book. And it was just a couple of days later that it was like, you know, there's nothing wrong.
my ex-wife or my second wife's drinking had nothing to do with me. And hey, man, you got to take care of, clean up your own mess again. And you better go back to AA. So, you know, God intervened. He sent me a good friend at the ATM machine, and he put a book in the path of my buying this bottle at the store. So I found a meeting in town. It was a Saturday morning at 7:30, and walked in, announced myself again as a newcomer, and met my sponsor. After that meeting, it was kind of close to this little park area near the river. After that meeting, I went down to the river again by myself. And this is the second time that he's saved me. So when I think about that book and the title of that book, God of Second Chances, and you know what I know today is he's a God, at least for me, he's the God of unlimited chances. But the thing that we have to be willing to do, or at least I have to be willing to do, is to ask. And I found myself kneeling down by the riverbed, saying that same prayer that I said, kneeling against the bed when I was up in Calistoga. And it was, please help me. Just please help me. And that was, that was November 9th, 2001. And I haven't had to get loaded since. And it's not from my own doing. I don't possess the power to have gotten myself clean and sober yet again. So, how does that affect and relate to hope in my life today? Every day is a gift. I know this today, but it's been through the course of a lot of painful soul-searching lessons, seeking God, seeking to understand more why I think, feel, and act the way that I do. I can't completely blame it on alcoholism. While that is a big, you know, a big factor, and there are a lot of characteristics, at least as I've come to believe it, traits of an alcoholic or an addict, a lot of it has to do with human nature and human behavior. And I think we all suffer from a lot of the same things. Some of us just find weird ways to deal with it and cope. And then when we find something that works, we take it to an extreme. And I know that certainly that was my case in a lot of different ways. So every morning I wake up, and the first thing I do now is I just have quiet time before I even hit the bed. And I always have these great intentions, how I want to be of service to people in the day. And, how can I make this day not about me? Because that's the first thing that comes to mind is all these busy things that I have to get up and get going and get busy doing and, being and, working or chores around the house or doing something in my yard or just all this stuff, right? And it's like, whoa, stop. Hang on a second. You're not doing anything without me. You're just not. You might think that you can, and you are, and you'll get through some of this stuff, but eventually things will happen in the course of your day that will be left you with a choice, and how are you going to react to something today? And today, I've grown to a place to where I want to react with all the things we talk about in the room: kindness, patience, love, tolerance, compassion. Those are the ways, those are the things that God exudes. I think that those are his characteristics, not necessarily mine as a human. But yet I want to be more like him today. So, it takes work. I have to do something every day. So I have that time in the morning before I even get out of bed. And, by the time I throw the covers off, I'm feeling pretty spiritual. I'm feeling pretty good. And then, you know, my feet hit the floor and I get 10 steps down the hall and everything can kind of change. It's weird how life and wanting to follow the characteristics of a God and godly ways can get easily disrupted and just derailed. That's what I'm trying to say. And I know today that I'm a firm believer in the yin-yang, good, evil. The sun comes up, the sun sets, the tide comes in, the tide goes out. There are many forces in this world, again, to which I can't necessarily explain, but they are at work in some level, I believe, in each and every one of us on a daily basis. So I have to work at it. Every single day, I have to ask, how can I contribute something? And there's one guy from a meeting here in town. You know, we get these, and I'm gonna end on this note. We just sometimes you hear something from someone, and it's just gonna be this nugget, just this huge gold nugget that has such an impact. It changes how you think and feel and go out in the world. And there's a guy who I met at this same Saturday morning meeting, which, by the way, is my home group. And he has this saying, and this kind of ties back into just wanting to be comfortable in our own skin, right? And what does it take for me? What does it take to do that? And I've come to know today that it has to do with being of service, which is something that I don't always want to do or be of service, because my favorite thing still is to think about me and what am I going to get out of the day and how am I going to orchestrate something that, you know, that I would like to do or experience, but it's not about me. And I need to remember that every day. Anyway, this guy would always say, you know, I can't always be, and this is the nugget. I can't always be happy, joyous, and free. Sounds good, right? Happy, joyous, and free, something all of us would want every day, right? I'd love that. But he'd say, I can't always be happy, joyous, and free. But I can be useful. I've said this to people I don't know how many thousands of times, and every time I still cry like a big baby. But I can always be useful. And a funny thing happens when I'm useful, is I become happy, joyous, and free. And I'm just like, at first I didn't believe it. I'm like, wow, could it be the key to genuine depth of happiness be that simple? And I would sit here right now and say, yes, it can be that simple. So I actually even tested this. I purposely went out on a mission to just find every opportunity I could to be useful in every situation. And you know, gosh darn it, if he wasn't right. Because every single time I would get some sense of, gosh, I can't, it's just so much bigger than I am. I can't hardly even explain it. Some sense of everything is okay in the universe. And you are okay. And you are loved. And life is grand. That's the sense of what I would get every time I go and try to practice what this guy suggested. And it's something that I still practice every single day. How can I be useful? And it's changed my life. Now, am I happy, joyous, and free every minute of every day? No, I'm not. I wouldn't expect that we would live in that kind of a state. Maybe it's possible. Find some shaman up on a mountain on the side of Nepal somewhere, and he might tell you that you can do that. But me is just some ordinary schmo here trying to still stay clean and sober and live a better life today. I don't know if that's entirely possible, but it sure is a heck of a lot better. And as a result of all that, I can say that more times than not all the time, but more times than not, that sense of just wanting to always be or needing to be someone else and not feeling comfortable in my skin is gone, pretty much gone. And I like being me today. It's okay. I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not where I used to be. And I guess I'll stop with that. So thank you.
Thank you, David. That was so good. I have so much to say, but I'm going to start with, we met at that Saturday morning meeting, and the Happy, Joyous, and Free, I think that on a weekly, if not daily basis. You had talked about, you know, we used stuff as a survival mechanism to kind of escape the way we feel.
Yeah.
What do you use today when you're in that state of disarray, instead of going to a substance or an escape, what do you do?
It's God. I turn to God, and it's taken a long time to develop the discipline to do that and not act like an ass and act out in some way that's unbecoming. And I can't say that I can practice this every single time I'm starting to be by something derailed, but it's truly God. Again, and I think I touched on it, I believe that there's forces that are working for us that want to rally around us and champion us and lift us up and help us become better people. And there are also forces that every single day scoff at that and want to do nothing but tear us down and hurt us and make us feel ways that, you know, are just awful and sad, and will actively work towards you know, doing that, getting us derailed, pushing our little buttons. They know what buttons will, you know, cause us to react. So, you know, one thing I didn't get too into is, you know, the relationship that I've developed with God and how that kind of happened, and has to do with, you know, becoming a regular attendee at a local church. I sat in the back. Literally, I went and I sat in the back for 2 years, and I didn't want to meet anybody or really talk to anybody. But what I found out was they kept talking about this guy who lived a long, long time ago and tried to be a model, and is a model to millions of people all around the globe. And the things that he was teaching and still can teach us, if we become willing to look in the right place, that would be the original big book, the Bible, you know, talked about how we could live in certain principles. And the correlation that it became obvious to me after sitting in the back for a couple years was the same things that this guy was teaching thousands of years ago were the same exact principles that they're teaching in the rooms of AA.
Which are? Give me a couple.
Give you a couple. Do always try to do the right thing, right? Compassion, patience, tolerance, love. Probably the biggest thing is love. And that's something that you know, another thing, gosh, there's just so much work to do. You know, this program isn't for sissies. If you want to be successful, you've got to be willing to, you know, to put in some work, to love people. You know, I can be out walking around or shopping somewhere and, you know, I'm not saying that I don't love people, but it's not like I'm walking down the aisle in the grocery store. It's like, oh my God, I just love you. You know, I pass by some stranger. You know, that's not how my thought is. My head is, you know, has so many years of being this judgmental person. And the Bible talks about that in our big book, in AA principles, talk about, you know, we can't be judging. We need these defects of character, as I would put it. And, you know, the teachings of this person thousands of years ago were taking a look at, we have to take a look at our own stuff. And through that process, then can we evolve to where we can become the opposite of that. So, you know, being loving, I literally now I have to stand. Sometimes I'll stop myself in that same grocery aisle and like, you know, I want to see the good. What does God see in this person? Right? And again, it's something, you know, I have to pray for those things in these weird situations that try to derail me through the course of the day. I have to, you know, it's like stop, drop, and pray. Stop, drop, and pray. And prayer has become a big part of my day, and it's continuous. I can't just think that I'm going to do it a little bit in the morning anymore. I used to think this. I'm going to do it a little bit in the morning, and boom, I'm going to be good for the whole day. I got this, right? Because by noon, something happens, and I don't have this. I'm going to react in this human, fleshy, carnal way because that's the DNA code that I've had for thousands of years of being a human. And, you know, my desire is to not act in those ways and not be that person. But I don't possess the power that it would take to just relieve myself of that. So it's this constant willingness, seeking, praying, looking. And I went on and on. And did I even answer your question?
You did. I'm impressed. You got right back to the answer.
It's like, oh, so.
And it's one of the reasons I asked you to do your chair, because I love hearing you speak. And one of my favorite nuggets that I get from you, I have two of them that I think about quite a bit and I've repeated, and I'd like you to touch on them if you don't mind. One of them was more recent, so I'll start with that one. There's the apple tree and there's the ripple when you'd get in the pool. And you told these stories and related them to your life, and they're such great visuals. Do you remember the apple tree story?
I don't recall the apple tree story.
You have an apple tree in the backyard and you were going to cut it down.
Oh, yeah.
And you needed to trim it. Okay, let's
see. Right. So my wife and I, and by the way, I'm successfully on wife number three now. We're going to stop there.
We like her.
We do, yeah. Yeah, and she somehow, I'm not even sure, but she likes me. So it's a win-win. So we bought this house about a year and a half ago, and it had two apple trees in the back. And last season, one of them produced a lot of apples, and the other one produced none. Just none. And I thought to myself, oh, we just got to cut that tree down, take it out. It's no good. And then, you know, the Bible talks a lot about being pruned. And as people, we're constantly, life and situations will put us in places where we wind up getting pruned. Or as we talk about, maybe in AA, we talked about becoming right-sized and gaining some humility as a result of that. But it's not something we usually seek. It's something that usually, from my experience in my own life and journey in recovery, is thrust upon me. So I recalled when I was doing some reading, and it talked about, you know, being pruned and how you have to get pruned to have new growth. And I thought, well, you know, before I cut that tree down, because I don't know when it had ever been pruned, I'm going to prune this, right? So I looked up online, how do you prune an apple tree, and da, 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 da. So I pruned it, and oh my God, you would have no idea. It was just like, it's just thriving. It has just as many apples as the other tree does. And I'm like, wow, so glad that we didn't cut that tree down. So I guess the moral of that story is my life and my existence is like the apple tree. Right? Now, I'm not going to become the willing participant in my pruning most of the time. If the apple tree could have, would it have grabbed a pruner and started whacking off
part of its branches and its limbs? No, that's ridiculous. And we don't do that. And as humans, we're certainly not geared towards that line of thinking. So thank God, here we go again. Thank God there's a God that thrusts pruning upon us in many, many, many different ways to where our ego has to become smashed and we reach a point of like surrender. There's the word that I probably, you know, could have come up earlier in this talk. Surrender. The tree has no choice but to let me prune it. It couldn't ever say, as I approached it with the pruners and the loppers, no, 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 stop. It's just a tree. It had to be a willing participant in the pruning. But as a result, so I pruned it. It probably hurt it. I didn't know. I couldn't feel. I'm not the tree. Does a tree feel? I don't know. We as humans feel. And I know that pruning's not comfortable. It's whacking off appendages. It's whacking off limbs. But it gets us shrunk down and right-sized. That's what I did to that apple tree. And it's amazing the growth and the production of good fruit that I'm going to get out of that tree this season. I think our lives are similar to the apple trees, but we certainly wouldn't go prune ourselves. So thank God again, thank God there's a God that's going to prune us and put us in situations that beat us down to a place of willfully surrendering. And then at which point we can, you know, we can grow back better, hopefully better and stronger than we were. Okay. Thank you.
I appreciate the visual.
Yeah.
And there's one more that we can wrap up with. And that was, and this goes back a few more years, so you might have to dig a little deeper, but it's when I think you were swimming a bit and you were in the pool one morning and you spoke about touching the water and the ripple and your actions on other people. And
right. Yeah. So I'm actually not a big swimmer, but I do run a lot and I go to the gym pretty regularly. Part of my routine at the gym, I'll do my workout and then I'll go sit in the sauna and I'll just sweat it out for a while. But then I have this cool down process where I'll go and I'll just get in the pool and I'll just find a spot along the wall where I just sit. So while the water is cooling my internal thermostat and bringing me back down, and as I would sit there, I try to become very conscious and not kind of intentionally not wanting to move and disrupt the water, because I wanted to sit in just this very still pool. But what I noticed, what I found, and life is a lot like this, even my breath, just breathing in and out, would create ripples. Let alone if I pushed the water or moved my arms in any way, that would create large ripples or even small waves across the pool. So even as I would just try to sit there and be completely still, and just be in the stillness, every breath created a ripple. And I would sit and watch this, and I became fascinated, almost mesmerized by this. I would watch these ripples go out across the pool, hit the wall, and come back to me. And it dawned on me how life is just the same way. Everything I do, at some point in some way, is sending out energy, vibration, sound, movement, whatever. It's sending it out there, and eventually, it all comes back. It's just one of those weird laws of the universe, right? Was it Newton that said there's all, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? So every ripple eventually came back. Everything I do, everyone I touch, eventually comes back. So then I got the weird idea. It's like, okay, let's put that to use for the power. Let's find the powers of good in that. And then, you know, intentionally go out in our day today. Can we go out in our day today and say, okay, if that's true, if everything I do is going to touch somebody and then come back to me, well, gosh, I just want to try to do more good things, right? And it kind of became this fun little game. And how can I just go out into the world today and send out good ripples? And eventually, you know, they'll come back to me. And again, it's one of those things that I can't completely explain, but I benefit from the fact that it's a truth. It happens, and it does come back to us. Everything that we do in some way does come back to us. So try to do good. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
For more information, read the first 164 pages of The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or visit keepcomingback.net.